Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Charlton Live, sponsored by the British Institute of Kitchen, Bedroom and Bathroom Installation. I hope you guys are well. My name is Louis Mendez. This is the big match preview on this Thursday. We'll be looking back at the 2-1 win over Cheltenham during the week, and of course ahead to the FA Cup clash at Gillingham coming up this Saturday as well. Joining me to have that discussion is Mr. Mark Newbury. How are you doing, Mark?
There we go. I'm all right. Yeah, I was going to tell you, I was borrowing Benji's microphone. No, I'm all right.
Well, that worked out really well because you had exactly the same effect as Benji's microphone there. Good to have you on the show. We might be joined by Joe later on, but we'll see as the evening progresses. But as I said, we'll be looking back at that 2-1 win against Cheltenham. We're going to hear the goals and some post-match reaction from both Michael Appleton and the goal scorer Alfie May later on in the show. We're also going to hear from a Gillingham fan ahead of Saturday's game. Lewis Hart is going to join us on the show as we look ahead to the FA Cup clash with the Jewels. We also want to hear from you guys as well, everyone joining us in the live chat. Good evening to Sam. Good evening to Trev. Ticket collection, Trev. We used to get the press tickets from. Good to see you, Trev. Haven't seen you for a while. Keith's in there. ND Miller, Dudley, Michael, and all hell let loose have joined us. Anything you want to say on Tuesday's game or looking ahead to Saturday's clash with the Jewels, just let us know. Email us studio@charltonlive.co.uk or you can tweet us at Charlton Live. Before we hear the goals then, Mark, from Tuesday, how would you sum that victory up? I guess the most important part of that sentence is victory, and everything else is something of a side note.
Forgettable, I'd say, from that. But apart from, you know, two pens in a game, forgettable. And easy to pick the mistakes out. That's a thing. Sometimes with games, you can just like forget the mistakes people have made. With this one, it's quite easy to go. We can remember where the mistakes were made. In theory, we should have taken them to the sword, pun intended. But we didn't. And they belied where they are in the table, I think. I think they played some nice stuff. I thought their goal was very good. We just didn't look as compact as we normally did. And I think there's an obvious problem in midfield. We'll address it later on. But I think it was a forgettable. The main things are we got the points. And at the end of the day, that's what you need.
Certainly do. Right, well, let's have a listen back to the goals then from Charlton TV. As always, your commentators were Greg Stubley and Mr. Terry Smith.
10 long away down the right-hand side. Headed clear by Adam, but only as far as Circum. Ball into the box. Straight to Goodwin. Who scores?
Well, it's a wonderful cross by Circum, but Goodwin allowed all sorts of space, tucking in between Tanay Watson and Michael Hector. Talked about Cheltenham not afraid to go long early. It's just a header that's dropped nicely for Circum. They've allowed the cross to come in, Cheltenham. Goodwin completely unmarked. Just had to hit the target with his header, get it beyond Maynard Brewer, and Cheltenham have the lead. What's been a nervy start for Cheltenham defensively, we've been punished.
That header, and Lieben could spring on that right-hand side, and does. Up against Freestone, right corner of the penalty area. Looks to take him on. Oh, it's dive in, and it's a penalty to Cheltenham. I can't tell how much contact there was on that right corner of the penalty area, but it was a silly challenge to make by Freestone. Lieben went down. Referee gives a penalty.
I have no idea what Freestone's thinking, Tell. I just assume he thinks he's going to cross the ball and dives in to try and block it. Lieben's going nowhere. He's under pressure. He's held up the ball well, trying to take his man on. The Freestone has just made a sliding challenge. That looked like a penalty from where we are.
Penalty, mate, from the penalty spot. Steps forward. Strikes it hard, low and through. Luke Southwood for the equaliser.
Well, he said he wasn't going to celebrate. But that's the call that would have meant a lot for Alfie, mate. 16 now for him. Well, it's been a wonderful season. A wonderful penalty. Hard and low past Southwood. Gets Charlton the equaliser.
Still Charlton in possession, though. Therese Campbell gets the ball back from Louis Watson. Is there a handball in there? Yes, indeed. The assistant is flagged. And Charlton have another penalty. There's going to be arguments here because I think Cheltenham felt there was a foul from Dobson on the edge of the area in the build-up to that. And there's a booking coming in here as well. But when the ball was released to Therese Campbell, he lifted it across. And I didn't see whose hand it was in the air. Was it Freestone again?
There's no question that it hits a hand. Where Cheltenham will feel aggrieved is whether it's in an unnatural position. It's Ferry.
No, it's Ferry.
Yeah, his hand's up there. I mean, it's harsh.
It is a harsh one.
It looks like it hits his elbow as he's diving down.
His arm is up in the air, I guess, so that's the reason. Alfie May has the opportunity to get his second and Charlton's second, but in front of the covered end. Alfie May steps forward and drills it home! Charlton do have a second. Alfie May does have a second, and the Addicts have their noses in front.
Well, times like this, you look to your key man, your talisman, to step up, have confidence. Goalkeeper goes the right way, but it's a perfectly placed penalty. And Alfie May's on the score sheet once again.
There we go, the commentary of the 2-1 win over Cheltenham Town at the Valley. Well, I've started it again. Over Cheltenham Town at the Valley on Tuesday evening. It's an interesting point made in the chat, actually, by Dudley. So good evening, everybody. I didn't get the feel-good feeling after the win on Tuesday. And I'll be honest, like, I don't think that was only Dudley who had that. I've never seen such a flat reaction to a victory as I did on Tuesday and spilling over into Wednesday. When you look at the forums and on social media and whatnot, it felt like I don't know, people were weirdly underwhelmed by perhaps the performance as a whole, because you know you go into a game against the Cheltenham side who have picked up recently, but you really want your home games to be sort of statement performances at times, and it wasn't that. We really had to grind that one out, but we did, so it's not all bad news, I guess, Mark.
Yeah, I know. I understand where people are coming from. I think you're looking to dominate a game. If you dominate a game and you win, I think you feel a bit more warm and fuzzy. I think if you'd looked at that game, if we'd drawn it, I don't think there'd probably been too many grumbles because we were lacking in areas. The penalty, the second one, I agree with Terry and Greg. It was very fortunate, but they're given nowadays. You only have to lift your arm slightly and it hits you. And it did hit him clean on the hand. I don't think it would have got to any red shirt in the middle, but that's not the point. And Alfie tucked it away very nicely. I agree with what someone said that Alfie's pens have been straight down the middle and he is going to hit the goalkeeper and he's going to miss one that way. He's got a great shot on him and he proved with his second pen, hard, low, to the edge. Goalkeeper's not going to get anywhere near it. But as for feeling a bit flat, I think that could be a combination of everything. I mean, the small crowd, the evening, and you want for willing them to do well, and you want your players to be exciting and running, and it didn't happen. We were perfunctory. We did the basic stuff, but there wasn't anything which made you go, wow, that was exceptional. A couple of good turns, but it's not like it was an end-to-end game either, because I don't really remember Ash making too many saves. So yeah, I think it was probably just one of those games. As soon as we equalised, I think Cheltenham were like, well, if we can get out of here with a point, we'll be happy. And probably some to accent the way we'd been playing, we'd probably said to ourselves at halftime, if we get a point out of this, we probably deserve that, but no more, no less. I mean, look, you take the luck where you can get it. I'm sure we'll probably have something go against us sooner or later. So I can understand the flat feeling, but at the end of the day, you've just got to say, look, it was a three-pointer, and that's the important thing, and just move on from it.
Yeah, it was Simon who said, how many of Alfie's pens have gone straight down the middle? He's going to get found out. But I don't think he's missed one yet in the regular season. He did miss two in pre-season. But yeah, unless I've forgotten one, I can't remember him missing one in the regular season. Didn't Corey miss one relatively recently? Michael said, a very lucky win, wasn't it? Sort of summed up a bit where we are as a team. At least it only took buying Alfie May for us to finally beat Cheltenham. Yeah, that's our first ever win over Cheltenham. Yeah, I mean, you spoke about chances. And I mean, let's start with obviously the goal we conceded. The worst possible start. And it was an excellent cross. I think it was Sercombe from the right-hand side. And then the goal scorer, Will Goodwin, just completely unmarked in the middle. You know, Michael Appleton says, you know, we've got to be doing better with that goal that we've conceded. And again, I mean, how often have we seen moments like that this season? It just happens. It just happens too much for us. I think it was, all hell let loose, said Goodwin, unmarked, given a free header. Now there's a surprise. Unfortunately, it didn't happen too often on Tuesday, but it has happened too often this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw a lot of Eden getting, quite a bit of grief for the headed ball. But when you watch the original ball come over, he's backpedaling away, which is difficult enough. And he's watching the ball and he's got his head on it. Now, it's quite difficult as you're backpedaling, watching the ball to then think, well, I've got to knock this out for the corner. So he's knocked it back up. The guy who's crossed the ball has literally touched it once down with his chest and he's hit a first time cross in and it was a good header. I'd be more inclined to say to Hector, I know, as looking along the line, Watson's got to look and say, hold on a minute, he's got clear, I've got to get closer to him. And Brownie was saying it, but you've got to get closer, and if it goes over a pair of you, there's no one behind you. But Hector, they would have been done in training. People would have been said, right, this is their main target man. And I always thought if you've got your target man, you've got to keep an eye on him all the time and you've got to be touch tight. Now, unless Hector's developed, 10-foot arms, he's not touch tight on their striker. So for me, I'd think it was a great cross. And I think sometimes you've got to say it was a really good goal. And their strikers finished it really well. But I think Hector should have had more awareness. And I think if it had been Ness fair, we'd have gone, inexperience, he's let the guy go, get between them. And he's pulled away. It's what we want to see our strikers doing. I don't think we do it enough. Be a bit clever thinking about it. But with Hector, he's old enough and experienced enough to go, right, where's my guy? As he's got Jones, you can see Jones, you can see what's in front of him, but he should be looking to say, right, where's my guy? I should be closer to him. So I think if Hector's closer and he can put him off a bit, you don't know what's going to happen. But, you give a guy that much time and space. And like I say, it was a fantastic cross. And sometimes you've got to hold your head up and say, look, they worked it well. It was a good goal. And it was. I mean, it's not like it's scuffed in and stuff. But, you can pick fault all the way, really. But I don't think Eden deserves the grief he's been getting about his defending. Because I'm thinking if you watch the ball and watch his positioning, he's really not got much option of how he's heading that. So,
It'll be interesting to see how, I mean, you're speaking specifically about Eden, how he sort of grows on the defensive side of his game. Because I think there's probably still a little bit of room for improvement. He brings probably similar to Sess last season. He brings a bit of excitement going forward. But yeah, we'll look at that. Also wonder if Tanay Watson on the far side could have given a heck of a shout. Because I'm looking at that communication that caused another issue a few moments later when there was that ball into the 6-yard box. And I think it was hacked away by Jones, hit Hector. And then Hector turned around and said to Ashley, why weren't you giving us a shout? Because he was coming off the line to get it as well. So maybe work to do there. I mean, our equalising penalty, what on earth was Freestone thinking diving in there? Because Miles was going absolutely nowhere. But silly mistake. The sort of error that you probably do make when you're down there, and gave us a way back into it quite quickly. It probably took until the end of that first half for us to really start piling up those chances. And I felt we might well have had a second penalty for the handball. I think it was from Tedic after he came on and the ball went inside. Looked like it was a handball. Corey hit the post. We saw Watson's volley that was tipped over, and Tedic had a chance as well. But yeah, it took a while for us to really burst into life at the end of that first half, didn't it?
It did. And it's strange because there did seem to be a lot of space for us to use, and we didn't use it. I mean, until Corey got that chance where he's dribbled in, and like I say, he's done everything but score. And then it's come back to Dobbo and they've blocked it. And it's strange because the guy's blocked it. So it's come off a defender and the linesman's put his flag up for offside. And you're thinking, well, hold on a minute. It's not he wasn't offside when Dobbo had the shot. But I think we were forced into playing it too tight in the middle. And I think itself, it didn't help with the with Miles going off. And Tedic is just a slightly different player to Miles. And
is that a nice way of putting it, or does he not bring the same quality? I thought he was hit and miss, to be fair. He did well for the chance he created with the shot. Obviously, he missed an absolute sitter at the start of the second half. But, you know, Michael, yeah. Again, I asked Michael about him in the interview, and it's been clear that he's wanted to see more from him, which is obviously the reason why he hasn't been getting in the side.
Yeah, I don't think he's sort of like shown enough. I mean, when we signed him in on loan, and they did sort of like a highlight, so, oh, you know, these are the goals he scores. I'm thinking, I've not seen any of that. You know, he's hardworking. And it's funny because he reminds me a bit, and I can't think of the guy we had on loan who played in the playoff final and was ended up going to Wickham.
Josh Parker.
Yeah, and you're thinking he's hardworking, but his final ball, his final shot just isn't there. And I understand, you know, having a bigger guy up front and more of a target man. But I agree with that, Mickey Apples. I'd like to see more from him because I think he has been given some opportunities. So, and obviously now with Lee Byrne being out injured, there's more going to be more opportunities come his way unless, I mean, just start of December now, unless we pick up someone in January. I know he said he wants to keep Kanu playing at Southend. I would recall him because I don't think the other two youngsters we've got coming off a production line. The young Irish lad, I know, scored 5 and has got really good awareness. I just don't think it's, I think it's too early for them to be doing that. I don't mind in the cup games. But we're going to struggle up front, I think, especially if we're just relying on Alfie, because teams are just going to end up marking Alfie out of it.
Chris said, I thought Lee Byrne must have had a rocket after Carlisle. He definitely showed a lot more effort than against Cheltenham. And then Sam was here saying he thought he looks good until he went off and asked if there's any update on his injury. Not yet. I mean, Michael's got a presser tomorrow morning, so we might hear something at some point tomorrow, but it depends on whether he's gone to have his scan. Again, I do ask Michael for the immediate reaction, which we'll hear in the interview in a few moments' time. Chris Reader says, question for you, Louis. Do you think if we'd been offered Lyle Taylor now with Lee Byrne's injury, would we have signed him? Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, we asked Michael about Lyle Taylor after the Sutton game. I don't think I played it on the show, but Rich put it in the paper after he had already signed for Wickham. And effectively, he said he's not a big fan of signing free agents at this point in the season because they, you know, especially ones that haven't played for a while because of how long it takes to get them up to speed. So it would have to be a desperation signing because of the situation that we find ourselves in. But, you know, I even asked about, Kanu coming back and, Michael wasn't exactly that bothered about bringing him back at the moment. He says we have got like Patrick Casey, like Mark mentioned, and then obviously Mika and Bick on the bench. Right, let's bring in Mr. Joe Puddyfoot, who's joined us. Evening, Joe. Good to see you. Your mic is sounding absolutely beautiful. We were just talking about Tuesday's game. What was your reaction to that one?
Yeah, well, I've just put little man down, so if you can hear screaming in the background, shout, and I'll immediately mute and run away. Tuesday, I thought it was one of those games where we really struggled to control in midfield. And it was a little bit open and end to end, which I didn't particularly enjoy watching. But we got the job done in difficult circumstances. So pleased with the win, but I would have liked a better performance. I think we need some more complete performances and probably Watson to come back into that midfield. I don't understand why he's not starting every single game, if I'm honest, because he'd be pretty much my first name on the team sheet at the minute.
Yeah, and that's obviously a discussion point that's going to come up as well. Second half, I thought it took us a while to carve the real chances out. Like Corey got in on the left a couple of times. Once he cut in and fired at the goalkeeper's legs, once from a tight angle when he should have squared it. He seems to be going for the near post. But, you know, TC coming on made a bit of a change and he helped win the penalty. near the end. And again, it was Alfie that put it away. Jay saying that much like last season, if you lose Alfie May, we aren't scoring. Fraser doesn't do enough. I think he's overweight. Looks like he's running through mud. And he said last season, he was obviously talking about Jez Rucksacki. I mean, so Joe just mentioned it there again, that the whole Louis Watson and Scott Fraser debate. You know, I asked Michael about it after the Carlisle game, just about the battle between the two players there for places and what he sees as Scott's, I don't know, the reason he brought him into the team for the Carlisle game. He spoke about experience, but obviously he decided to stick with that experience on Tuesday. I mean, would you go for experience over youthful exuberance in that decision there, Mark, between the two players?
No, I don't think you... I don't think it's one of those games where you're going to need that. And there is experience in the team anyway. I know Joe did some stats saying about, you know, our success with Louis starting as opposed to when he doesn't. And we were much more successful when he's starting in the team. I don't understand, you know, I've sort of like, I've cheered for Fraser, you know, over the last sort of like a couple of seasons, and you really want him to like show, but he's not, and he's not doing it. And he's not working hard enough. And I understand what the guy's saying about he looks like he's running through mud. I'm thinking, well, I don't actually remember seeing him run. So it's he could have just been stuck in the mud. So it's just like one of those Sabutio players who are just slightly off all the time. I understand to an extent where we might think with Watson there, is he a little too similar in stature and style to Dobbo? But I'm thinking, well, surely two Dobbos would be great anyway. So, and now we've got McGrandles, and I understand what Mickey's had him before, so he knows what he can do and trusts him. And again, he's still getting back up to speed, and that's a bit obvious. But it's a bit weird one with Fraser. I think the jury has always been out with him, but I think the jury's coming back soon and has got a bit of a verdict. I don't think he's looking good for Fraser. I would have Louis Watson in. As like you say, youthful exuberance. And I think it would take a little pressure off Dobson a bit as well, because he's got someone else who can do that kind of like Yorkshire Terrier snapping at your ankles job. It's kind of thing. So he's not going to let people settle where Fraser would let them settle, have a cup of tea and move on.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's got elements to his game that Scott can bring to him, and again, it's whether he does it enough, which for me, I've always found myself questioning. You always feel like there's more to come from Scott that we don't quite get, which I find hugely frustrating. Hi to Sid, who's watching, and Sophie as well, says hello to her dad in there, which is nice. Dean Chapman's going to start a furious debate about whether it's too early for a Christmas tree, because Mark's got one up in his living room. Mark has got like young twins, to be fair, so I think the boys love it probably. Right, let's hear from Michael Appleton actually, because we've got loads of audio to get to today. I spoke to the Addicts boss after the game against Cheltenham in midweek, and this is what he had to say. 2-1 win against Cheltenham. Did you have to grind that out a little bit?
I think we did, but it's probably nothing more than what we might have expected, if I'm being honest with you. Obviously, you know, Cheltenham come here on the back of 3 wins in 5 games. Fantastic result for them on Saturday against Oxford, and won deservedly. So we knew it was always going to be difficult. Didn't get off to the start that we would like. A poor goal from our point of view for lots of reasons. But then I thought after that, you know, we should have been out of sight at half time. You know, the amount of opportunities we have. I know the keeper's made some decent saves, but, you know, we have to be more clinical in front of goal than what we have been tonight, and certainly in that first half. Having said all that, I thought they held the nerve, the players, limited them to very little, definitely in that second half, other than sort of crosses in the box and the odd set play. And pleasing, yeah, just pleasing that they've shown a little bit of patience, a little bit of calmness at times. I know there was an urgency from the stands to get the ball forward quick, but the problem with that is you're coming up against a side that are used to that and can deal with that, and you don't want to turn it into a game of tennis or ping pong, as I call it. So I think when you sort of weigh everything up and you look at it as a whole, the one thing I did say to the players is, I can only speak personally for me, it's the most satisfying victory I've had since I've been here.
Yeah, I think we saw that on Alfie's face as well. I mean, he said he wouldn't celebrate if he scored against his former club, but he didn't for the first, but he couldn't help himself for the second. It's how important that goal was.
Yeah, it was huge, just for belief, for everything. You know, we've done all right over the sort of, you know, period of time in the league games since I've walked through the door, and this was this is a big result for everyone. We knew that the two cup games coming up, it almost felt like it was an international situation. Whereas if you get a positive result, now we've got two free hits, so to speak. You know, we've got an opportunity in two cup competitions to progress. And the next time we have to think about the league will be on the Thursday after the Reading game.
And your home form is looking really good at the moment, particularly in the league. I think I make it 5 wins from 7 in the league here. Why do you think it's so different between home and away?
Well, the fans are a big help. Obviously, they stick with the team and they get behind the team. And I think, you know, there's a few clubs in the country and a few grounds in the country that are able to almost help the players suck the ball into the back of the goal. And I do believe that, you know, we're one of them and we're delighted with that. But again, obviously, you know, the pitch helps us. It is a big, wide pitch. You know, there's not many bigger in the Football League. And we've got the profile of players to be able to deal with that.
One bit of bad news, obviously Miles going off in the first half. Was it his hamstring he was holding?
Yeah, hamstring, yeah. And you know what? I felt for him as well because I thought he was playing really well. Not only was his link-up play pretty good and he looked a threat in behind, but I thought he was up for the challenge. He wanted to fight and a scrap with Curtis, which was pleasing because, obviously, you know, Curtis Davis is a very experienced player, a very experienced pro. I've coached him, I've worked with him at West Brom and I know what he's about, but to be fair to Miles, he gave him a tough time early on.
In the early stages, can you tell if it feels like a bad one or a...
Well, it's high up, which is a bit of a worry. You know, it's normally a little bit easier when it's lower down or it's on the side, but I think it's high up on the inside. And so, listen, I don't know if he'll go for a scan tomorrow because these type of things, they swell and they bleed and you've got to stop the bleeding first. So possibly back end of the week, he'll have a scan and we'll be able to give you a bit more info.
Obviously, Tadic came in and probably unlucky not to at least get a goal with that great save in the first half. The chance he probably feel he could have done better with in the second as well. But were you pleased with his?
I was delighted with Teddy. Just said that then, you know, on the TV. Yeah, I was delighted with Teddy. You know, I've asked questions of him over the last week or so, demanding more of him. I've not seen that since he's walked through the door. I've walked through the door. I've not seen that enough of him. And I think he knows that and I've made it clear. And I think I got a bit of a reaction out of him today, which was pleasing. I can only be happy that he'll want to do that on a regular basis. And if that's the case, then obviously he can be an asset to us.
There you go. That's Michael Appleton speaking to me after the game on Tuesday. Tony sent us a message on Twitter, said it was not a great performance. Nice to win. I thought Cheltenham were anti-football in their approach and we still kept trying to play possession-based percentage balls in the first half. Second half was poor. I thought Corey had his worst game for us and I worry for Tedic. She needs a goal and quick. Looking at Appleton's points return, I think we're gaining momentum and pushing our way into the playoffs as previously said. I mean, if you look at his points per game, over the course of the season, we'd come close but probably fall ever so slightly short. But, you know, it's... Yes, that's the frustrating part about us every season is we can get a manager in halfway through possibly fall just short based on their points return, but we never then stick a whole season together because of the squad and the turnover and the way we start season. So that seems to be the case for us, it's frustrating because it's the same every season. Steve said scrappy win, but we'll take it. Thought Fraser was very poor. Can't understand why Tedic is unable to win a header. Thought Lloyd Jones was good though. Strong at the back and good in distribution. McSquared says he thinks we're now in a better place than any time since Roland Duchatelet took over. At least we appear to have some stability thanks to Mickey Apples. The squad is much better at this stage than it was 12 months ago. Still thinks it lacks a depth and sufficient quality, though, to make a serious promotion bid. That's from McSquared. A couple of people have said, are we going to have a little discussion about the new chap that's come in today? Will Abbott has joined as the Director of Performance Services, Joe. It's a role that the new lot have said they're going to fill for a while. And this guy comes after 10 years' experience with Brighton, you know, well-run club. So, you know, obviously it's hard to assess someone who you hear very little about in backroom sort of stuff. But hopefully on paper that sounds like a half-decent appointment. And we'll see if he can have a good effect on the club.
Yeah, I thought it was a strange one, actually, from his perspective when I first read it, because I thought, why would you drop from Brighton, but basically can't do anything wrong, it seems, and come to Charlton, who have a history of not doing anything right? It's a bit of a jump. But I suppose if you're not on the playing side, it's maybe less daunting. But he's got his work cut out, hasn't he? He's come into an injury-ravaged squad. He's got the enigma that is Chuck's Anike, so perhaps he just really fancied a challenge. It's nice to see, though, on a serious note, on the backroom staff, it seems to be that we're putting some decent appointments together and actually getting some proper footballing roles filled by people with a little bit of calibre. And it's not, you know, Charlie Methven's nephew that has been roped in to be the director of performance.
Is there no way we could get Thomas Sandgaard's missus to come back and do the job? Might be a bit cheaper.
Well, it would probably be cheaper, but I'm not sure we can afford the visa. That's the one thing we do have to get past. But we can maybe outsource the role. Ultimately behind the scenes, it's got to be right behind the scenes to be good on the pitch. And slowly but surely, it seems like we're getting that part of the system right. January would be massive. We need a good window in January, and then probably going to need another good window in the summer to really go and take this league on next season. But outside of those two elements, I'm sort of quietly confident about the sort of shape that things are taking behind the scenes. And it's been a long time since I said that, and I'm obviously now expecting that to all blow up in my face immediately, because anytime we're optimistic, something happens.
Yeah, that's what normally happens. And obviously, the backroom staff is important, the players that they put on the pitch important as well. But hopefully, Dr. Will's arrival will be a step in the right direction. So the club are saying he'll overlook things like the medical, nutrition, sports science and psychology departments. So, work cut out there. As Michael says in the chat, the Brighton connection, though, is hopefully a good thing. Right, we'll have a quick break. We've still got loads to talk about. We're going to hear from Alfie May in a few moments' time. We're going to have the debate about Alfie May playing on the right. We hear Alfie's opinion on that and Michael Appleton's opinion on that. Of course, we're going to turn our attention to the Gillingham game. Our Jill's guest is already in the waiting room, Lewis Hart, so we'll speak to him later on in the show as well. But let's have a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue chatting Charlton. Thinking about a new kitchen or bathroom? Find professional, independent local installers with free home surveys, itemised quotes and protected payments, trading standards approved contracts, and workmanship warranties. The British Institute of Kitchen, Bedroom, Bathroom Installations accredits installers to ensure they are police checked, fully insured, and experienced. Take the risk out of home improvement. Visit bikbbi.org.uk.
Hello fellow addicts, I'm so excited to tell you all about our micropub, The River Ale House. The River Ale House is based in East Greenwich. It has 6 Pub of the Year awards, an ever-changing selection of amazing beer. It's owned by Charlton fans, walkable to the ground in just 20 minutes with buses that go direct to the Valley too. If your matchday routine includes a drink with your friends, you must join your fellow addicts in the river. See you soon.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview. We're still looking back at the game, the win against Cheltenham the other day. It was a important 3 points for the Addicts. As I said, it improved, increased our decent home run, which isn't too bad. 5 wins out of the last 7, but obviously only 1 win on the road in the league all season is partly why we're not quite in that playoff conversation yet. I think we're still 7 points shy of the top six, which isn't the position you want to be in. If we were to continue on Michael Appleton's points per game, which is 1.67, from now until the end of the season, we'd finish on 72.7 points, which is just outside the playoffs probably. But also that's taking that short spell and stretching it over a course of a season, which is a bit harder as well. So still work to do. One man who doesn't really need to do any more work for the rest of the season, he can have the rest of it off if he wants, because he's already hit any goal target I ever set for a Charlton striker, which is 15, is Alfie May. And he got another two on Saturday, both of them from the penalty spot against his former club. This is what he had to say after his brace against Cheltenham.
Two goals, congratulations against your former side as well. Most important thing, obviously, 3 points tonight.
Yeah, take my goals away from it. The 3 points is massive tonight, and a team like Cheltenham have come here and sort of give us a good test. And these type of the games that we have to win, and they can go. I've been in that change room at Cheltenham, and you come down to the valley, you get yourself right up for it because you know what crowd, how big the club is. So yeah, no, massive, and we build on to that now.
You said in your programme that you weren't going to celebrate against your former side. I think the second one you almost couldn't help yourself because it's such an important goal.
Yeah, it was the winner, and I sort of, it ain't one of my normal celebrations. I think sort of give it the big one. But for me, if I score two, sort of I owe Cheltenham a celebration because they've been so good to me since I've been coming, and they pay their hard money to come and watch us. So I thought I owed that to them, and I knew how important the 3 points was going
to
be.
It's hard not to celebrate because you try me the sort of person who'd celebrate winning a corner. Like, you seem to really love playing.
Yeah, I'd do about 15 celebrations normally. But yeah, no, it's a hard one because, like I say, I've said it plenty of times in interviews, what Cheltenham means to me. I'll probably get a little bit of stick from some of the fans now, but it is what it is. It's football. I moved on, and I've got to do it for Cheltenham.
What does this comparison with Erling Haaland mean to you as well? Because obviously you're back on level terms now.
Yeah, I'm chasing him, isn't I? again on Haaland. Yeah, it's one of them. It's a good tool to have. I'm not saying I'm up near his level. He's, like I say, I've said it plenty of times. I got a little bit of stick from a few Man City fans messaged me saying who I am, or who are you? But I basically just said he's doing it at the elite level. Him and Harry Kane are the best strikers currently in the world. So I just try and learn from how Harry scores goals, and he stands in the middle of the box and taps them in, and every striker wants to take them.
They know who you are now. You talk about standing in the middle of the box. Actually, Michael's also just been in talking about the fact you've been asked to play a few different roles, playing out wide. I mean, it hasn't seemed to have stopped you. It's certainly something that fans have picked up on. When you go one game without a goal, it's like, why is he playing out wide? But do you mind being put out there?
Nah, the gaffer knows. He knows my mentality. I just want to play. I just want to be on the pitch. So I'd play anywhere. And they're sort of, when we went 2-1 up, I was getting asked to sort of drop deep in midfield. And listen, it's a new role for me, something different, but I'm really, really enjoying it.
So there we go. That's what Alfie had to say on being asked to play out wide. And I've just got one more bit of audio that we got to get to, because I think it's important to hear what Michael Appleton has to say on it as well. Obviously, it's been a big discussion point, particularly after the game at Carlisle, where obviously we had a few moments in the penalty area and didn't take as many as we would have wanted. And the question comes up, well, what's Alfie May doing out on the right-hand side? So Michael did address that on Tuesday. This was his thoughts on why Alfie can play wherever he wants him to play, really.
Because obviously, you know, people keep saying, or I keep reading about, you know, well, he's not playing in the right position. He's doing all right considering I'm not playing in the right position. Because, you know, apart from just the penalty goals, he's scoring a lot of goals. And he looked like he could score two or three more tonight as well in that first half especially. So, yeah, he's in a good place. I'm glad he's in a good place because, obviously, when he is, he's hard to stop.
When you say that, there's obviously been a lot of talk that he needs to play as the 10, sort of behind the striker, but you're playing him on the right at times. Yeah. So you feel that that's a beneficial position for him?
We scored a hell of a lot of goals doing it. So, yeah. I think what we sort of tried to get into Alfie's head early doors, and I think this has worked, is that, you know, a lot of the time when you're the striker, you're the first in the box, and there's a tendency to be easily marked because you're there, whereas whether he's playing in a wide position or as a 10, you tend to arrive a little bit later. And I think if you look at all his goals, there's not many of them where he's had a touch. You know, a lot of them, he's like one-touch finishing, arriving late. And even the goal at Pompey, he made a run from a deeper position in that wide area to get his goal. And, you know, so I think he's bringing a different dimension to his game, and I think it's making it more difficult for the opposition to deal with him. But I would say that, wouldn't I?
There we go. That's Michael Appleton. I mean, he's still getting goals no matter where he plays, Mark. Obviously, they came from the penalty spot on Tuesday, but the one at Portsmouth came from out wide. You know, when he was shifted out wide at Wigan early on, I think it was later in the game he got shifted out wide, if I remember rightly. Both times I was thinking, come on, is this the right place to put your prolific bagsman out by the corner flag? And well, he every time he's moved to a different role, whether it be from the 9 to the 10 or then from the 10 out wide, he's still scoring. So, I mean, as Michael says, does that mean Appleton's confirmed as a tactical genius, or does it mean we've had a gamble and it's paid off?
I'd say the second one. But, you know, with Alfie, he's got energy for days. His running, you know, you see he was asked to drop back into midfield, and he ran. He is literally a non-stop runner. Where he gets the energy from, if he could bottle it and sell it, well, if he could bottle it, he could give some to Fraser. So I don't mind him being out on the right, funny enough, because I think if he's in the middle, he's going to be probably kicked up in the air and overshadowed by some big lump of a centre-half, and the ball's not going to get to him, and, you know, not going to be knocking it long, and he's going to be trapping it and bringing people in. It's just not how we're playing at the moment. So if he's out on the right, you know, he's up against a fullback, someone who he's got the speed with, because Alfie is quick. And, you know, the fullbacks don't like people running at them. They want to defend. They don't like people running at them. We've got Corey on one side running at somebody. What you don't see is, obviously, it used to be the fashion of wingers would swap over from time to time just to sort of cause tactical issues for the opposition. We don't tend to do that. We tend to stick where we are. And I don't mind him being out that far and arriving late and being an open. Yeah, you want your strikers, you say, to be in the middle, be in a six-yard box. But if it's working, and you can't turn around and say after 17 goals, it's not. So I think it's, you know, possibly tactics. I might be doing Apples a disservice. But we've got the player there who, I think there's a certain type of player that if you were to wake them up at 3 o'clock in the morning, hand them a pair of boots and say, right, you're playing now, would go, right, fine, where's my shorts, where's my boots, where's my shirt, I'm going out and playing 3 o'clock in the morning. He's one of them. And I think we've got a few of them in the team. We don't have enough. And I love Alfie May's enthusiasm. And that's the thing. You want it to rub off onto the other players, kind of thing, because he plays with a smile. He's deadly. He knows the goal doesn't move. He doesn't have to be looking up to see where the goal... He knows the goal doesn't move. So if he hits it well, he knows it's going in. And again, I think people bring in the Haaland thing. You're saying, yeah, okay, it's at a level, but he still scored a hell of a lot of goals. And, you know, you wouldn't swap him at the moment, I don't think, for many other strikers.
Yeah, but maybe for Haaland, though, to be fair. Alan says we should try him Saturday in his best position and see how it goes. I mean, we do have defenders, Mark, who look like they've been asked to wake up at 3 o'clock and play over the last few seasons, haven't we? Johan said that May has to play striker. Luke said he really liked him at the tip of the diamond in midfield, like sort of that 10 role, making late runs that are hard to track. And I thought he looked good there, but like we've said, he's looked everywhere. He's looked good everywhere, really. He says that personally, I prefer an out-and-out winger on the right, like Tyrese, but personally, I'd play Chen, but Appleton doesn't fancy him. That's what Luke has to say. Right, we've left our Gillingham guest in the waiting room for way too long. Let's turn our attention to Saturday's trip down to Priestfield, the ground we just can't seem to get away from. Lewis Hart now is a Gillingham fan. He joins us on the show. Good to see you. Thank you for joining us to talk about the Gills. Yeah, as we said, every season we think, right, we're not going to have to go and sit in a stand made of scaffold, and every season you come back to haunt us again. Tell us about the Gills this season. How's it gone so far?
Absolutely. Well, first, I just want to say thank you for taking me on. Really appreciate giving the time, and I do have to apologise on behalf for having to experience, once is enough, but no, carrying on having to do it isn't really the most pleasurable experience. This year, it's been a bit of an interesting year. I don't think it's really gone the way it's expected. If you told me after five or six games we'd be in this position that we're in now, I wouldn't have really believed you. Starting off the season really, really well. Winning our first four games 1-0. And then obviously having to defeat to Colchester, then coming back from that. And to see the position that we're in now, where I think we're about 10 points off the top of the league, seventh, 5 points from the next position, it hasn't really gone to plan. And I do think a part of that was the football that we were playing simply wasn't sustainable. That's why Neil Harris, ended up getting sacked, whether you agree with it or not. The football, it wasn't sort of very much positive. A lot of it was sort of on the back foot and the sort of, as you mentioned earlier about Cheltenham playing a bit anti-football. I definitely think we could have been accused of that at times. Obviously we've got a new gaffer in now. Although we did beat Wimbledon on a Tuesday night, people weren't best pleased with it. It almost felt like we lost in a way with the way we played. If you're going to sack a manager for the style that they play, you hope that the manager that you bring in, with this being Stephen Clements, is a sort of improvement. I've struggled to see that. I've struggled to see this improvement in play, or even an attempt to play in a different way. I do feel like it's very, very similar to how we played previously. It's just, I feel like in this position now, I know it takes time for new managers to bed in, but the Tranmere defeat and this performance, although we did win, with it not being impressive, that does leave a lot of question marks about potential future. With people already sort of losing their patience with Stephen Clements, as mad as that sounds, about three or four games in. But I do feel like that's just how football is now, with people being so reactionary. It does take time. But overall, to be how we started to how we are in now, I can't help but say it's frustrating.
Yeah, I can sympathise with your frustrations. I remember actually texting the boys through the season saying they've got more points than they've got goals. How do they keep on achieving that? Because it's normally a point of goal is where you end up. Obviously, goals scored is a bit of a challenge. Yeah. But you've got three players from us. Obviously, you've got Johnny Williams, who creates but doesn't particularly score. Lapsley is full of energy. And then Macaulay Bonn, who I wasn't the biggest fan of, but how are they getting on? And has Macaulay made any impact other than in the front gardens of Gillingham?
Yeah, he's obviously made a lot of impact on the front gardens, not just himself, but trying to injure other players as well. I think it's a hard one. Listen, I don't ever want to throw any player under the bus, but he came to us particularly unfit. I don't think, just looking at that on the eye, I don't think anyone knew that he was in a fit state to play. And it has taken time with him. Like yourself, you aren't a massive fan of him. I don't think you're alone in terms of Gillingham fans not being a massive fan of him. I think people have been very disappointed. They do see some of his track record. Obviously, he had a couple good, sort of a decent season for you. Done very well for Leighton Orient. Being at QPR, I think people are like, Macaulay Bond's the answer. He's the sort of the guy, he's the striker we need for our problems that we have going forward. He hasn't really been the answer. But the question that I always have is the play style suited towards him? Mentioned there, anti-football, negative football. Does that suit towards Macaulay Bonn? Because really, he's feeding off a lot of scraps. He's not really having the service to him, or the particular way that he's played isn't really suited towards Macaulay Bonn. But I can understand the frustrations that people may have with him not hitting the ground running as well. But I do feel like, if he gets himself fit and has a run of games, I do see sort of, there is definitely potential in him, as we've seen that before. We have seen that potential with him before. Like I said, he came on Tuesday night. First thing he done was got the assist for the goal. He's playing up top. When you're playing up top on your own, you are hung out to dry a little bit. I do think if you had a little bit more company around him, maybe two up top, we'd be a little bit more beneficial from that. It's a hard one. As I say, he did come in quite unfit, quite overweight. That's not me trying to throw him under the bus. That's just simply a fact. So I do think with Bonnet, it will take time, but I can understand why people may have those frustrations.
I think if you did throw him under the bus, they'd probably be flagged for offside anyway. Yeah. What it is, I was going to say, I was a manager on Talk Sport this week, and he was talking about League Two. He thinks is actually the hardest division to get out of this year. With obviously everyone talks about Wrexham coming up and Notts County and being there. What do you think your realistic expectation is for the rest of this season?
I think when you look at it now, I'd take playoffs. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't overly. I mean, it's easy to say after four games of our start, I would have been, you know, very much like, you know, we playoffs is a minimum. And I said that before with the money that we're investing, the money that we've got in, the personnel we've got in. When you look at it on paper, we're easily a top six, top, you know, we're a top 17. We deserve, we should be in the playoffs. Everyone was tipping us before, you know, they say Gillingham will be up there this year. But League Two is a hard league to get out of, but I don't, you know, whilst it's a hard league to get out of, I don't particularly think the quality is amazing in a way. You know, as I say, we aren't particularly playing well. And I don't think by any stretch of the imagination we've been world beaters. But we find ourselves seventh, so we still find ourselves in a playoff spot. So I definitely think ability-wise, I definitely think it's full of a lot of poor teams. But with the money we've invested, like what would I take? I mean, obviously, I'd stay playoff. We do need to get in the playoffs for the money that we've invested. Do I think it's a realistic proposition? I think if you had it on four scales, I'd say it's unlikely for us to get it. But I think, you know, we might, you know, invest loads in January. Clements might get us playing again, and you know, we might comfortably finish in top seven. But for me, can I see it right now? Probably not.
But just briefly, then, Lewis, your last question: do you guys see us as rivals? Sometimes people sort of outside of Cheltenham try and say this is a bit of a rivalry game, but I don't really know many Cheltenham fans who see it that way.
Do you know what it is, mate? Like, you know, when you've got that. You've got Charlton fan, you've got Crystal Palace, yeah, you've got Millwall, you know, you've got a couple other South London teams. You've got the big brothers, then you've got that flipping, like, annoying little brother that's just like chirping up to you all the time and won't really shut up. I think that's what we really are to you. I think that's what we'd probably be. But for ourselves, you know, we're full of little brothers, and we're the big brother in a sense when it comes to Kent, and you know. You let's be honest, mate. You did try and nick our fans back in the day when you were in the Premier League. So, you know, we can't really forget that. so do I really consider you rivals? Probably not. I don't really care. Do you know what I mean? If someone said to me, you know, I support Charlton, I won't think any different about them. But I don't know, mate. I don't know. I'm going to sit on the fence here. I'll probably say no. Like I said, we're trying to force rivalries with certain people, and you know. I definitely wouldn't consider Charlton one of the rivals.
Yeah,
so as you wouldn't as well.
Yeah, I'm glad we've got that answer, because that is pretty much the way we feel. Right, Lewis, thanks for coming on, mate. That was really good.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you for
Cheers for your time. Best luck for the rest of the season after Saturday, of course. There we go. That was Lewis Hart, who's our Gillingham fan, who joined us this week and spoke very well, actually. Fair play to him. Let's hear from Michael Appleton ahead of the trip then to Priestfield. Just asking for a very brief look ahead. And we were talking a little bit about Patrick Casey and Mika Mbik on Tuesday. So I'll start off by asking if they've got a chance of being involved over the weekend.
It was on Saturday. I mean, would there be a chance for the likes of Patrick or Mika then to get a game, do you think?
There's always a chance, because ultimately, you know, from a numbers point of view, we're still going to have to go there on Saturday with 18, and he earned the right to be in that tonight. You know, there was a couple of players who probably feel a little bit unfortunate not to be on the bench tonight, but they're the decisions you got to make.
How big do you see Saturday? Obviously, it's one step away from a third round tie, and Cheltenham had a great tie in the EFL Cup last year, and it meant a lot to the supporters.
Yeah, and you know, it means a lot to me as well. The cup, you know, that competition has been good for me. Well, they both have, to be fair. So I just want to win every single game I can play. And if I think I've got a good chance of doing it, then I'm obviously going to try and win it. You know, I think when you get an opportunity to play in the third round of the FA Cup against one of the top sides, you can't sort of take that lightly, and we won't be taking it lightly, and we'll give it our best shot.
The Jules will be a good test, so obviously they're half-decent side in League Two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, obviously Clem's got in, he's changed the style of play. You know, they're looking to play and play through the thirds now, so he's having a right go from that point of view. So that's something that, you know, I think would suit us, to be honest with you. I think we find it a little bit easier against that type than what we found tonight. So, yeah, can't beat it, can you? FA Cup tie, second round, carrot of third round. That's what it's all about.
Well, there we go. Well, Michael Appleton sounds up for it, Joe. What sort of squad would you be taking?
I would take some of the kids. Any defender with a half decent grasp of the offside rule, and that would pretty much stop Macaulay Bond scoring. So that's that one ticked. Sorry, I'm leaving Hector at home. But yeah, it'd be nice to see Casey. It'd be nice to see Mbick. It'd be nice to see TC getting 90 minutes as well. But I think Tedic could do with starting a game. I'd love to see Louis Watson given an opportunity to once again demonstrate to Apples what he's missing out on by leaving him on the bench. And then both, you'd argue that both Fraser and McGrandles obviously need minutes because they're genuinely making Ben Watson look sprightly in the middle of midfield at the minute, which is a bit of a concern. So that'd be sort of where my head's at overall. But we don't have that many options to rotate, do we? So it's the players that are in the squad or the kids. The only person that I can categorically say I will fall off my chair if they're even involved in the squad at all will be Charlie Kirk. But outside of him, I suppose all bets are off for any player that is fit. It'd be nice to see us actually go there and put a bit of an actual performance in and sort of take them apart. Because these are next two games are great opportunities to build some confidence and give ourselves a platform for that difficult run into Christmas and the new year. And if we don't take this opportunity to get that confidence up, then it's going to be an opportunity missed for me.
Yeah, Jill's Saturday and then it's Reading away on Wednesday in the Bristols. In the next round. Dean's saying, don't do a Cray Valley first leg, win the game, then bring the kids on. Is that how you see it, Mark? We've sold out the away end. Obviously, it's slightly reduced because part of it's fallen down. But we're taking a big lot down there. So we obviously need to put on a show for those people who've paid their hard-earned to go down to Kent.
Yeah, I mean, it's saying don't play the kids, but I'm thinking, do you now class people like Simway, Karoy Anderson in that kind of bracket? Because they've got a fair amount of experience in now. I think possibly have a couple of kids on the bench. I think possibly he might stick Ness in alongside Jones. And again, it depends if you start Tedic and have Alfie on the bench if you need him, which I would think would probably be a better idea. You know, possibly whether Corey comes in or out. I know where Joe's going with Kirk, and I'd agree, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did make an appearance. He's already played in the cup, so he's cup-tied if he goes anywhere else anyway. And it could be Apples has said to him, right, you have one last chance. I know Joe's laughing here. You have one last chance. It wouldn't be on the realms of Charlton's possibilities.
It would shock me to my very core if we ever saw Charlie Kirk playing again. Unless there's some sort of bug that wipes out the entire team and Charlie goes out on his own, purely because of you know, the fact he's not getting in the Papa John's or whatever it's called squads. He's not getting in the FA Cup squads now as well. I think Michael was quite clear when I asked him after the game against Cray that he's going to be drawing a line underneath that one. All hell let loose is asking, would Joe play Ashley Maynard-Brewer in goal? I mean, Sam Walker has played the cup games recently. Which way would you go, Joe?
I wouldn't go with Walker. If I was going to rotate anyone into goal, I'd actually give Molyneux a go. Walker genuinely puts the frighteners on me every time I see him run out. It's like he's never played football before, some of the stuff that he seems to do. So for me, it's either Ash, and it'd be nice for him as well, because he was there on loan, wasn't he? Played about three games, got injured. So it'd be nice for them to see what they could have had if he'd had stayed fit. So rub that salt on that wound a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm not convinced he played any games, actually. He might have been, I think he was injured in pre-season, but I may have misremembered that. So yeah, would be interesting to see which way we go with that. Right, we run out of time on this week's Charlton Live Big Match preview. Massive thanks to everyone who's joined us in the live stream this evening, giving us your comments. Don't forget to subscribe to us on our YouTube page or via the podcast app where you listen back to us. Don't forget to check out our Etsy store. We're coming up to Christmas. Again, we're shifting more mugs than we have for the rest of the year. So charltonlive.etsy.com if you want a Charlton Live branded mug. Mark's got his one. I've got my one there, the third kit colours one. They're actually pretty cool. And they're dishwasher safe because I've done about 6 months worth of testing there. So give that a go. CharltonLive.hc.com. Massive thanks to Lewis, who joined us as our guest earlier on from Gillingham and confused me by spelling his name the same way you spell Louis, but calling it Lewis. That was ridiculous. I mean, he's never coming on again. Big thanks, of course, to Mark and to Joe for your time this evening. Good to speak to you two.
You're welcome, mate.
Yeah. Just bring your hard hat Saturday for the scaffolding.
So don't forget, we'll be back on Sunday to look back at whatever happens against Gillingham. But thanks for listening this evening. I'm Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live, sponsored by the British Institute of Kitchen, Bedroom and Bathroom Insulation. We shall see you again on Sunday.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.